Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, it turns out we didn't need a bill. We just needed a president. You know, I was going to open up the show by saying, what a difference 1 year makes. But what a difference 6 months makes. Heck, look at what a difference the first month of the Trump administration made. Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We have a great guest kicking off the show here this morning. Paul Perez is the president of the National Border Patrol Council, representing all the great men and women in our Border Patrol, many of whom work here in Montana, of course. Paul, what an honor to have you on the show. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be with you guys.
Yeah, from your perch as the, you know, the head of the National Border Patrol Council, what has a 6 months difference made just, just the first 6 months alone of the Trump administration?
Yeah, it's like you said. I mean, within the first month, President Trump did more in those 30 days than President Biden and his administration did in the 4 years that they created a chaotic border. So right now, compared to where we were a year ago, it's completely different. It's a lot better. It's a lot more secure. It's the most secure that we've ever seen it in my entire career.
Wow. And how many years have you served so far?
I've been doing this for 28 years now.
Wow. 28 years. Yeah. Give us a summary of what the southern border might have looked like last year to what it looks like right now.
Yeah. So 28 years under five different presidents. You know, it's completely night and day. So under President Biden and his administration, you got to understand, he staffed his entire administration with open borders advocates. So these were people that were, interested in one thing, and that was allowing as many illegal aliens to come to the United States as possible. And they bent over backwards. You know, they got these sanctuary cities on board. They allowed them to use taxpayer funds to house them in five-star hotels in many locations. But what was the worst thing of all was they took all the Border Patrol agents off of the line in order to sit them behind a computer, process to release all of these illegal immigrants, many of whom were unvetted. We could not access any criminal histories because a lot of the places that they were coming from weren't giving us any access to their systems to determine who these people were. So President Biden and his administration, they knew that, but they allowed the release of these people everywhere into the United States. And look what they've done all across the country, places like Aurora, Colorado, places like New York City, places like Chicago. They have run rampant. They've committed crimes, everything from murder to burglary to robbery, everything in between.
Even on the northern border, we've had Trinidad and Aragua operatives being smuggled right into, you know, small towns like Shelby, Montana. All right, hold that thought. More to follow with Paul Perez, the president of the National Border Patrol Council, with us right after this quick break. And then we've got Eric Moore out of Miles City. He was with the Farm Bureau in Washington, D.C., so we'll talk with him about that trip as well. Stand by.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Paul Perez, the president of the National Border Patrol Council, you know, when he was telling us about the southern border and how, you know, our Border Patrol agents were not allowed to do their jobs and protect this country from illegal aliens invading this country. Instead, they were being diverted to simply process the paperwork to allow these people into our country. Paul, I heard the same thing on our northern border. We had tipsters telling us that northern border resources were being diverted, and even some of them were forced to remotely work and process the paperwork for illegal aliens on our southern border. And now we've got problems, of course, on our northern border as well.
Yeah, you know, that was a direct result of the direction given by the Secretary of Homeland Security and the Commissioner of CBP at the time, who are long gone. Thank goodness, you know, that they went out with the previous administration. But yeah, they had all of these northern border agents logged into computers, virtually processing people that were on the southwest border because, again, we were so inundated, we were so flooded with the amount of people that Biden had allowed in. So we had to bring those guys physically here to process, and then those that remained, get them behind a computer to virtually process. And so in my career, we had never seen what I saw happen there. You know, you had certain parts of the northern border that were being flooded with illegal alien crossers that we actually had to send southern border agents to back them up on the northern border, something that I'd never seen happen in my career. And so they lost complete control of the border, and they refused to acknowledge it up until the very end. At the very end, they tried to change a few things, but it was far too gone. The border was far too gone. They had allowed millions of people into the country, and it crashed on them. It helped President Trump win the election because he was able to show exactly the chaos that they created and how he would fix it, and he did it in a month.
And it's kind of funny, too, because it's like, it's also when it comes to the men and women in ICE or the men and women in Border Patrol or in coal mines or coal-fired power plants, we're the ones standing up for union workers and union jobs, whether it's government union workers or private sector union workers. And meanwhile, the Democrats are trashing ICE and trashing Border Patrol. The one big beautiful bill has some incredible new resources for ICE and for Border Patrol. I saw Stephen Miller was posting on X. They've got a $50,000 retention and signing bonus if folks want to step up and join ICE and help secure our country right now. And it sounds like Border Patrol has some incentives as well.
Yeah, this is just one part of the big, beautiful bill. And, you know, the genius of Stephen Miller and the people that he's got running the agency now, the Department of Homeland Security and down to the Border Patrol, they've got good people in these roles. And they've acknowledged that we have millions of people that are in the country that have to be removed. But we need to hire some ICE officers. We're going to get 3,000 new Border Patrol agents under this big, beautiful bill, which is what we need to help us secure the border. We've got the line. We're holding it down. Now we've got to get into the interior and remove the millions of people, and that's where ICE comes in. Those 10,000 agents that we need are going to do exactly that. They're going to go to every city and community in the United States and wrangle these people up and get them out of our country because they should have never been here in the first place. So, yeah, those retention and signing bonuses are going to go a long way to get people into those jobs.
Now, the Border Patrol has the authority to operate and detain illegal alien suspects within a certain mileage range of the northern border, for example. Outside of that, it's more reliant on ICE, if I understand it correctly, because, you know, Border Patrol in northwest Montana has been doing a great job detaining a lot of illegal aliens. But we've got more problems on our reservations and in places like, you know, Bozeman and Gallatin County, Montana right now, especially.
Yeah, you know, we've got federal nationwide jurisdiction, so we can operate in any location. It's just depending on the types of activities that we're performing, whether or not we can enter, you know, certain locations within, you know, a certain mileage radius of the border. But, yeah, our agents are out there helping ICE right now. And in the northern border, you know, we've got a lot of agents. We've got resident agents. We've got a lot more than we've ever had. And so they're helping ICE. You know, there's a whole of government approach because there are so many people in the interior of the country who Biden let go. So we've got FBI, we've got DEA, we've got everybody that can carry a federal badge and gun helping our agents out and our officers. And that's why it's important to get these 10,000 ICE officers so that we can relieve them and let them go back to doing the job that they had. But again, everything that they're doing is being done because of the chaos created by Joe Biden and his administration.
You know, we talk about these new resources in the big, beautiful bill and more, and I know we only got about a minute or so to go here, but, you know, that big, beautiful bill got across the finish line in the Senate by, I think, one vote. And so, we talk about the importance of a president, but it's also the importance of the House, the importance of the Senate, and had we not elected Navy SEAL Tim Sheehy to the United States Senate, you might not have these resources for your men and women in the Border Patrol.
That's 100% true. And thank goodness for people like Tim Sheehy that voted to support President Trump's vision of what he needs to secure the border. And the big, beautiful bill was one component to that. everybody else that voted for it.
Paul Perez, the president of the National Border Patrol Council, thanks for your service. Thanks to all the men and women with the Border Patrol, and thanks for joining us here on Montana Talks. Great to catch up with you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it. All right, next up after the break, Eric Moore, a rancher in Miles City, former state senator as well. Yeah, I saw that he was on Capitol Hill here recently, not just on Capitol Hill, but also had some meetings with the White House staff as well. Yeah, he was in Washington with other members of the Montana Farm Bureau, so I'm looking forward to hearing about the trip, what was discussed, and what a difference a new president makes as well.
Fox Rocks.
I'm Michelle Plino. Slipknot is celebrating 25 years of their groundbreaking 1999 self-titled debut with a massive reissue dropping September 5th. The 25th anniversary edition includes a six-album blood-spattered vinyl box set, plus two LP and two CD versions, all featuring unheard demos, alternate mixes, and live recordings from 1999 to 2000.
Well, you're just another girl on the
set. Chapel Roan is taking a victory lap this fall. The pop star announced a handful of new shows in New York, Kansas City, and Los Angeles, along with a new single, The Subway, which will drop August 1st. She'll hit Forest Hills Stadium in New York September 20th to the 24th, Kansas City Memorial Park October 3rd and 4th, and Pasadena's Rose Bowl October 10th and 11th. Her first U.S. dates since the fall of last year. Next up for the pop star, she heads to tour Europe, kicking off in Oslo August 6th. That's Fox Rocks on Fox News.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, something else that was happening on Capitol Hill here this morning. I think the confirmation hearing just wrapped up in the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, but this is great news. This is huge news for Montana. President Trump gets not just one, but two nominees to sit on the federal bench as federal judges here in Montana. I'll talk about that here in a few minutes. In fact, I think I just saw a note from Senator Steve Daines' office that it looks like, oh yeah, it looks like we've got Senator Daines' remarks available. So anyways, Caden, I'm shooting you that email if you didn't see it. I know we were going to look to grab some of our own audio, but it looks like it might be available there already anyway. And earlier this morning, I caught up with Senator Steve Daines, so I want to share some of those highlights maybe in the second half of the show. But yeah, what a difference not just a year makes, what a difference 6 months makes. What kind of a difference are Montana farmers and ranchers seeing in Washington, D.C. already in just the first 6 months of the Trump administration? Eric Moore out of Miles City is the Custer Fallon Farm Bureau president here in Montana, covering two counties, also a former state senator. Eric, thanks for calling into the show this morning. How was the trip?
It was a great trip, Aaron. And yeah, like you led in, and I know with your audience, it's probably a little preaching to the choir, but I got to do the same fly-in that Farm Bureau does every summer in 2023, and then I got to go again this year because we had a last-minute cancellation. But, man, it was like going to two different countries. If you don't think it matters who wins elections and who sits in that office on Pennsylvania Avenue, and for us in ag, who appoints the people that run the BLM, the Interior Farm Service Agency, it was completely different. It's 180 degrees as you could. You think it was 20 years later and not two.
Yeah, I saw you there. It looked like you had, ranchers from Ronan, Montana. Of course, I saw Casey Mott was there, who's the Montana Farm Bureau vice president right now as well. So it was fun seeing his photo. And I was a little jealous, though. You guys went to my favorite restaurant, which is the Old Ebbett Grill. Doesn't that place just feel like an old Western saloon? And it's only about a block from the White House. I used to go there after I was done waiting tables on occasion to enjoy some decent food myself after waiting tables to pay for college all week long.
Yeah, well, that's what I asked Nicole Rolfe, our governmental affairs director, who was our lobbyist and was taking us around. I said, this is, those of you who've been to Helena, it's probably like the Georgies of Washington, D.C. I'm sure a lot of deals have been cut in those halls.
Yeah, that's right. So what were the issues that came up? I mean, just take us through the White House meetings alone that you had with White House staff. Yeah, I saw a photo of you there at the EEOB, the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. I mean, under Biden, they were pushing the waters of the U.S., crazy climate regulations that no doubt also put a target on the backs of farmers and ranchers and folks in production agriculture. And then he was putting people in like these, like the eco-terrorist Tracy Stone Manning to lead the Bureau of Land Management. And then she's given special favors out there to the APR over, Montana ranchers. So what's the difference like between when you met at the EEOB with, a Biden White House staffer compared to now?
Well, first of all, as I recall, the Biden White House wasn't even gracious with a meeting. I don't remember meeting with anybody from the executive branch in 23, but the biggest difference was we can actually be on the offensive, talk about what we can do to provide some certainty in the business and regulatory climate for Montana's ag producers, rather than just playing defensive, trying to put out the biggest fire. I mean, it really is. That's a good analogy. It's like actually building something and growing something rather than being on the fire line. The stuff that was done in that one big beautiful bill, just in terms of taxes, we preserved the 179A and 199A tax provisions, which are very important to Montana farmers and ranchers. We got some certainty in the estate tax or the death tax, which has been flopping back and forth between a $5 million and a $15 million exemption for crippling estate taxes that allow us to pass these legacy farms and ranches down from one generation to the next. So in the one big beautiful bill, we have a $15 million exemption that is indexed up for inflation. It does not sunset. So, those of us in family farms that spend a lot of time on estate planning, we finally have some certainty to deal with.
Well, and that death tax is so huge, and the certainty there that's going to be off the table. I mean, we see this all over Montana. Farmers and ranchers feel like they're being squeezed, and anybody who wants to get into farming and ranching, young people coming up, well, good luck finding the land, and even if you got the land, good luck holding on to it. And you got, the APR coming in and trying to kick you off the land, and then you have, maybe some out-of-state wealthy buyers trying to buy up the land for this or for that. And, and so, yeah, we've got to fight to hold on to what we got, let alone get new people into the game.
Absolutely. We are in desperate need. The biggest challenge to Montana agriculture is too much gray hair. Average farmer rancher ages is late 50s, early 60s, and we've got to diminish the barriers to entry for these new producers because the opportunity is there. The grain markets are a little soft right now, as everybody knows, but this cattle market is not to be believed, and the industry is screaming for guys and men and women in their 20s and 30s to go out, find a chunk of ground and buy some cows.
Prices are high, but inventory, numbers are even lower. And so, yeah, okay, prices are high, but if inventory's down, what does that mean for the future? And then, one thing we haven't heard too much about here lately is also, lessening our reliance on the big meatpacking companies as well, and seeing more of that type of the operation take place here locally in places like Montana.
Sure, and that's something we're always looking at. We've got the economy to scale and the workforce to contend with, which is another big issue that we talked to our congressional delegation and the agency personnel was the need to streamline this H-2A guest worker program, because despite what Secretary Rollins said the other day, I think that we're going to have 100% domestic workforce for American agriculture just isn't going to happen. Even up here in Montana, where we have kind of a good ag jobs in quotes, as opposed to like working in a major packing plant or a confinement hog barn all day, all the big ranches in my part of the world out here have South Africans on the H-2A guest worker program. And it's a good program, but it needs to be streamlined. There's too much red tape. There's too much headaches to have to go through. So we were lobbying on that awful hard, too.
Well, that's what we heard last year. We did a big, of course, I just had the president of the National Border Patrol Council on the show with us last year. We had Chief Chris Clem. Now I remembered his name. Chief Chris Clem, great guy, wild hairdo now that he's retired. But, we were talking about securing the border last year. But also on top of that is, one of the things that came out on that tour was how, if you were a farmer that needed to hire, migrant workers, and you were doing it the legal way, they made it harder for you to do it the legal way.
Yep.
But you could have a guy down the road hiring all the illegals, and no consequences for him. And so that's why we've got to, like you say, streamline the legal worker programs that ag has a long time used for various industries and various programs.
Absolutely. And it's so wonderful, again, coming back to our main theme, to have a receptive audience when you talk to them about that, because that's exactly what I said to the president's ag liaison officer that we met with, and he got it. He understood that. You're also talking to people who, it just seems like they have more, they're not necessarily Westerners or even people with rural experience, but most of the people we talk to in the agencies had been in the real world and done something, understood. They weren't just career beltway, you know, bottom feeders, which is what we seem like most of the agency personnel we talked to in 2023.
Community organizers that just like spending other people's money instead of producing something for themselves. And then what about all the major trade deals that have recently been announced? Crikey, U.S. beef in Australia, that's a big deal. We're going to hear more about that here in a second. The U.S.-European Union trade deal, I saw Zippy Duvall, the president of the American Farm Bureau, had some positive remarks to say about that.
Absolutely. No, it's great. And I explained to a lot of agency personnel that the beef trade is not like corn trade, right? We need our export markets for tripe and liver and lung and things, the parts of the cow that Americans don't eat. And we also need to import enough 90-10 lean trimmings from the grass-fed countries so that we can blend our 50-50 blend out of our plants down to get the 80-20 hamburger that everybody wants. We met with representatives of the British Embassy where President Trump just negotiated another trade deal with them. Again, not a big market, but a very wealthy one. And he told us that demand in Great Britain for U.S. beef is through the roof. And it's sort of a luxury item there. But, hey, if they got the money, they can buy it. So very encouraging news on the trade front.
Yeah, and hopefully even more positive news set to come in the days ahead with more deadlines approaching. I know you know who Bill Maher is. He's a very liberal guy, has a show on HBO. He stands up to the woke agenda. But, you know, he's been very anti-Trump, even though he had dinner with him at the White House and said he had a nice meeting there. But Bill Maher came out and said he got it totally wrong. He thought that the trade fights that Trump was fighting was going to lead to a depression. And he's now openly saying, he's like, I got it wrong. He said, it's working out. It's not working out poorly like he thought it was going to.
That's just like you said, that's the difference between a businessman and a community organizer.
Yeah. All right. Well, Eric Moore, great to catch up with you here. We got about a minute to go, and then we're going to hear from Senator Steve Daines after the break. But what else is going on in Miles City? How's the feedlot? Everything like that?
Oh, calves are high. We just got another inch of rain last night. I know everybody's kind of dodging hailstorms, so it's kind of hit and miss. But wonderful moisture and wonderful cattle markets. So we then President Trump's in the White House. So life is good, man.
I figured out how to stop a hailstorm. If anybody needs a tip. I leave my pickup outside, and then when I start to hear the tink, 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 the moment I pull my pickup in the garage, the bad storm will stop, you know? So that's how you stop a hailstorm, is just to finally do what I should have done in the first place, just leave the stinking thing in the garage. All right, Eric Moore, great to catch up with you always, my friend. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, gonna be good, man.
Yeah, you too. Speaking of Australia opening up to U.S. beef, Steve Daines, he was telling, I caught up with him earlier this morning. Senator Steve Daines told me he just had dinner with, was it the prime minister? Was it the foreign minister? Some big wig from Australia. And they had dinner last night. And so I asked him, I said, did you get him to admit that Montana beef, that American beef, is better than Australian beef? So you'll hear about that and more coming up right after this. And then we'll sneak in some of your phone calls before we run out of time today.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
Today we see that winter wheat harvest is moving right along with 80% complete nationwide. Now that's just 1 point behind both last year and the five-year average. Kansas and Illinois are essentially wrapped up at 99%, while Montana, Idaho, and Washington trail at 15%, 19%, and 35% complete, respectively. As for spring wheat, 92% of the crop is headed, slightly behind normal. Harvest is just getting underway nationwide, with only 1% complete so far mostly in South Dakota and Washington. Crop conditions remain a concern. Only 49% of spring wheat is rated good to excellent, down from 52% last week and well below last year's 74%. North Dakota stands at 64%, South Dakota 56%, and Minnesota is a standout with 90% good to excellent. Montana, meanwhile, is struggling with just 6% of its crop rated in top shape. In other news, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, in partnership with the National Agriculture Statistics Service and Natural Resources Conservation Service, is launching the 2025 Conservation Effects Assessment Project. The project aims to gather vital information about the conservation practices being used by farmers, ranchers, and landowners.
Approximately 23,000 stakeholders will be contacted for the surveys. I'm Wayne Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, yeah, they got some crazy liberals in Glasgow. I know. Some of them are my friends. You know, my buddy John, he's a really good guy, but, man, he just spouts the liberal stuff all the time. Just a never-Trumper. There was a Glasgow guy that commented on this story. Hold on, this ties into this conversation. So I mentioned how Bill Maher, on HBO, Bill Maher says he got it wrong. He was wrong. He thought Trump's tariffs trade fight was going to end in disaster. And he's like, man, I got it wrong. Especially as all these good trade deals are now being announced with the EU and others. But speaking of Trump and the never Trumpers here, I shared a story on our Montana Talks website. Forget Stephen Colbert's whining. Remember the Keystone Pipeline workers. And I think I shared this audio earlier in the week where Jesse Waters was talking about the big pity party that the Democrats are holding for Stephen Colbert, the poor millionaire. His show got canceled. Stephen Colbert, CBS was losing $40 million a year. Losing $40 million a year. But the Democrats throw this big pity party because he's now losing his show. And, a guy making $20 million a year is told his show is over, and they show up and mourn him like it's an open casket funeral. That's what Jesse Waters said. But when the Keystone Pipeline workers got laid off by AutoPen, or the soldiers were fired for not getting vaxxed, Democrats said, too bad. Anyway, I shared that story on Facebook, and there was some guy from Glasgow. I don't think I know him, but anyway, some guy from Glasgow, Brian, is it Burleson? I got to pull up his comment here. He was claiming, Stephen Colbert is just getting fired because Donald Trump is censoring CBS. And then a lady responded and said, actually, CBS is losing $40 million. That's why Colbert's program is getting canceled. And I replied to that comment. I said, good point, but this guy doesn't care. He just hates Trump. And that guy, the guy from Glasgow, he then replied to my comment. He says, well, you know what? You are right. He's like, I do hate Trump. So he gets points for being honest on that one. But speaking of honesty, yeah, here's Bill Maher.
I don't see a country in a depression at all. I see people out there just living their lives. And I would have thought, and I got to own it, that these tariffs were going to sink this economy by this time, and they didn't.
Honesty. This is why, by the way, he's not getting canceled, Stephen.
All right, that was Laura Ingraham's message to Stephen Colbert there on the tail end. Okay, back to it here. Yeah, earlier this morning I caught up with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines, and big news, the confirmation process for Montana State Representative Bill Mercer to become a federal judge. He was nominated by President Trump to fill a federal judge seat here in Montana. That hearing just wrapped up about an hour or so ago. Here is Senator Steve Daines talking about the significance And before he shared these remarks, Senator Steve Daines was talking about, you know, a little over 10 years ago when he was running for Congress, there was one Republican in the entire statewide delegation. Now the entire delegation is Republican. And one of the most important things that a guy like him could do is get new federal judges on the bench. So here he is talking about the Bill Mercer nomination.
Solid conservative. He'll be a great judge nominated by President Trump, who will fill one of those three positions. The second position in Montana, that Obama judge announced her retirement. So we'll have a chance to put a second Trump judge. In other words, in the not-too-distant future, Aaron, we're going to have a majority of our federal district judges in Montana as Trump-appointed judges. These judges are lifetime appointments. These are the kind of legacy moments that will affect our kids and perhaps even to our grandkids.
Yeah, this is so key. I mean, you look at why has our timber industry been killed, what's been anti-mining in Montana, anti-oil, gas, coal, agriculture, crazy far-left woke agenda. It's all been pushed and backed by these far-left liberal federal judges put on the bench by Democrats. And so, but it's credit to you and a move you made last year to block their attempt to basically pack the court before Biden got out of power.
Well, this is what John Tester and I talked about. Remember last year, we were in the middle of an election season, and the Democrats wanted to fill this vacant Obama judge position in Montana with another, you know, Obama-like judge, with a Biden-nominated judge. And it takes both senators have to agree to move forward with a nomination process, and John Tester and I could not agree on the judge to replace for that vacant position. And so I said, look, we're gonna wait until the election, and if President Trump wins, we'll move forward with a Trump nominee. And I was called all kinds of terrible names because I blocked a judge that John Tester nominated without my support.
And thanks to that move, President Trump now has two nominees for judges here in Montana. Senator Daines, I saw a recent op-ed that you wrote about the One Big Beautiful Bill and all of the big wins that are in there for Montana. I mean, the no tax on tips, I think everybody's tracking that one. You are the first to come out and file legislation, sponsor legislation, after President Trump first talked about that down in Nevada. But there's some really good Montana-specific stuff in here, like for the Bull Mountains Mine near Roundup and for timber sales and so much more.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of these bills, Aaron, unlike most bills in Washington, this is one where the more you dig into it, the better it gets. Most big bills in Washington are not big and beautiful, they're big and ugly. And the more you dig into them, the uglier they get. This is one that truly is, as Trump so correctly called it, a big, beautiful bill. Saving the Bull Mountain Mine, of course, is a big win for Montana. One of the other big wins for Montana and for ag country is we did in the death tax. I cannot tell you how many times I've met with the Farm Bureau, the stock growers, wool growers, grain growers. When they come to Washington or I visit them when I'm back in Montana, one of their issues has always been, we got to do something about the estate tax because we're not being able to pass on our generational farms to the kids. We put in a permanent fix here, a $30 million exemption indexed for inflation every year in perpetuity. And so now we're going to be protecting most farms and ranches from the tax man upon death. And that is an important way to preserve and protect Montana agriculture. There's some other wins in terms of natural resources. We expanded onshore and offshore oil and gas leasing. We mandated 6 lease sales over 10 years to the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska. We increased revenue sharing from offshore drilling for Gulf of America states. We also strengthened wildfire management prevention capabilities through expanded timber sales on public land. I mean, there's just so much in this bill, Aaron, and there's a lot of wins for Montana.
Oh, I even saw something random the other day, like Pell Grants. Okay, so you can get a Pell Grant to go get a 4-year liberal arts degree in basket weaving, right? But you can't use a Pell Grant to go to a trade school. That was a change that was made in here. Second Amendment rights, doing away with these unconstitutional taxes on our Second Amendment rights. That's what Southern Democrats did to prevent First Amendment rights, to block black Americans from voting, and they've had these types of unconstitutional provisions against our gun rights. That was changed.
For those listeners who have suppressors, which I've got, what they call them, cans on most of my rifles now, suppressors will no longer be taxed. It's going to take, I think it's about 90 days before that goes into effect. But suppressors no longer have a tax on, as well as any short barrel of firearms. So it's another win for the Second Amendment, as you mentioned. But this is, again, a bill. If we were to list all the items in here, Aaron, it would probably take us a half hour going through line by line of the big wins. But let's not forget, the biggest win was stopping a $4.5 trillion tax increase on the American people. The biggest tax increase in American history was coming in January. Had President Trump not led the way with the support of Republicans.
All right, and we'll hold it right there. We're going to get to your phone calls. We got Jason and Polson on the phone lines coming up right after this. Man, I'll tell you what, high energy earlier this morning before heading into Montana Coffee. You need some energy? Let me tell you about Power Plus Pain Aid. Not only will you get energy, you'll get pain-relieving vitamins at the same time. Natural pain-relieving vitamins, by the way. And this is a Montana company, created by a Marine Corps veteran in Big Fork, Montana. Yeah, this is, think of it like a smaller energy drink, like you'd see at a gas station, right? In fact, more Montana gas stations should get this stuff, right up there up front. It's a Montana product, but it's got energy and the pain-relieving vitamins in it, and it's just like one of those little energy drinks that you'd see at a gas station. You can get this in your hands, or maybe at your gas station. Go to drinkpowerplus.com. Enter the code FLINT15, FLINT15, at checkout, drinkpowerplus.com, and you'll get 15% off your orders. All right, Jason and Polson on the phone lines right after this.
News Talk 970 and 103.3 FM KBUL, your home for Fox News, Hannity, and Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Montana. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I guess it was Kevin Rudd, the former Prime Minister of Australia. That's who Steve Daines had dinner with last night. Definitely want to share that audio with you here in just a second. But first, let's get to your phone calls here. Jason in Polson. Jason, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to come back around. I don't know if you've talked about the PROTECT Act, which is being supported by Congressman Zinke and Senator Daines. Are you familiar with that?
You know, I saw something about this. So because our producer, Caden, he'll ask people, what's your name, where are you calling from, and in basically one sentence, what do you want to talk about? So this is a bill to allow government more jurisdiction. Give us your read on what this legislation does.
So right at the top it says, this is an act to amend the Stored Communications Act to include tribal courts as courts of competent jurisdiction, to amend the Civil Rights Act of 1968 to confer tribal jurisdiction over controlled substances, related offenses, firearms, and for other purposes. So just off that headline, like, multiple red flags come up for me, because tribal courts are part of a foreign government, okay? They're inside of the United States.
Sovereign nation, yeah.
Well, yes, but governments that aren't subject to or have their own rules for their people, okay? Now, if those governments are given rights over an American citizen, that violates the Bill of Rights in multiple ways. I get the idea that this is, you know, to try to solve a problem that has been created over multiple administrations. taking their Bill of Rights and slashing them apart for the American citizen isn't the answer. If the tribe and these sovereign governments are not willing to work with the state governments and the local law enforcement, then they're on their own. I mean, we can't take the Bill of Rights and American citizens' rights to, for Amendment Number 6, all criminal prosecutions and accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state. Okay, so,
yeah, so the concern here is that this gives additional authority to tribal courts to go after non-native offenders. That's the concern here, right? Yeah, I saw a piece at Northwest Liberty News. This was what, that's why when I saw your call, I was like, oh yeah, that'd be a good topic that we need to bring up here one of these days. So I'm glad you called in. Yeah, thanks for that phone call. So yeah, I saw this piece, NorthwestLibertyNews.com had this about what's being called the Protect Act. And basically the concern is that you're giving tribal courts, you know, sovereign nation, tribal courts, more authority over non-tribal citizens here. And so I pulled up the press release here from this legislation. The Protect Act would expand special tribal criminal jurisdiction to allow tribal nations to prosecute non-native offenders for drug trafficking. It would also allow tribal courts to execute warrants for electronic material to better combat drug traffickers and other criminals. So it seems like it's targeted. It has a narrow focus on drug traffickers, but I can certainly see where the concern is that, hey, look, if we want to go after these criminals, that's why we have the DEA. That's why we have the Montana DCI. That's why we have state and federal law enforcement. If we need more state and federal law enforcement, let's get more state and federal law enforcement. But yeah, the concern there is that you're opening up non-citizens to be, you know, prosecuted or gone after in tribal courts when you're not members of the tribe. Okay, so thanks for the call, Jason. I appreciate it. Okay, real quick before we run out of time, Senator Steve Daines talking about these big trade deals just announced by President Trump, including opening Australia to U.S. beef.
Well, by the way, talking about a win for the cow guys, last night I had dinner with Kevin Rudd, who was the former Prime Minister of Australia, and now the Australian ambassador to the United States. I had dinner at his residence last night talking about U.S. beef. Australia, for the first time now, has cleared the way for us to export U.S. beef into the Australian market. That's another win for President Trump and for his trade team. But now going back to the EU, this was a big one. Many thought that Trump couldn't pull it off. He was playing hardball with the EU. They've got a lot of tariff and non-tariff barriers. Many of those removed give us much better access now for Montana ag producers.
Did the Australian guy, did he admit that Montana beef is way better than their beef?
I told him that Australian beef tastes like kangaroo. He didn't like that.
You know, there was South African beef. There was, I think, Australian beef when I was over in the Middle East and, you know, lived out on the town. And it was like, it just doesn't taste the same. It's just, you know, I know we're biased, but I'm telling you, man, it just doesn't taste the same. But
well,
you know that.
We had talked about the differences last night, but, you know, we finish our cows with corn and so forth. And they're 100% grass-fed. I have nothing against grass-fed beef, but we give the consumer and give any one who loves American beef a choice. And sometimes U.S. consumers like that corn, those finishes there at the feedlot.
All right, so that was just part of our conversation earlier this morning with Senator Steve Daines. Full audio on the Montana Talks podcast. Hey, tomorrow I'm broadcasting live from Mountain Pass Safes and Coins in Kalispell. Come see us. Don't you-